There for the sheriff.
8:45 on the clock. We'll call to order the Gage County Board of Supervisors regular meeting. So please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I didn't intend to start that.
Well, I was waiting. Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation, Juergens, Hill, Dorn, Bauman, Lytle, Byer, Setzer. First on the agenda, consent agenda, which consists of the general agenda, approval of minutes of the meeting held June 10th, 2013, approval of all claims through June 26, 2013, in the amount of, is that the most current amount?
Yes.
$780,807.88. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve canceling check numbers. There's a couple checks here. Check number 13040271 and 13050006 to Bear Creek Copy Center in the amounts of $76.07. And canceling check number 13050206 to Pickerel Rural Fire District in the amount of $3,000 due to duplicate payment. Number six, approve utility permit 954 to Steel Flats for the installation of electrical easements located in northwest quarter of Section 20, Township 1 North, Range 5 East, in Glenwood Township. Approve utility permit 955 to Steel Flats for the installation of electrical easements located in the northwest quarter, Section 18, Township 1 North, Range 5 East, in Glenwood Township. Approve utility permit 956, Steel Flats, installation of electrical easements located in the northwest quarter, Section 30, Township 1 North, Range 5 East, Glenwood Township. Approve utility permit 958 to Windstream to extend a fiber optic cable located in Section 36, Township 6 North, Range 6 East, Highland Township. And from the Highway Department, approve hiring a full-time mechanic at $15.36 an hour and two seasonal flaggers for road work at $9 an hour. That is what makes up the consent agenda 1 through 10. Need a motion to approve or disapprove or to consider anything separate?
Just one clarification, Deborah. It says installation of electrical encasements. Usually it is easements. Is that supposed to be encasements or easements?
Oh, did I say easements? I did say easements, didn't I?
Yeah.
Deborah? Normally it said it is electrical easements, but is it easements or is it supposed to be encasements?
I said okay. It wrong. It's encasements.
That's
all,
fine.
All those permits, sorry.
Just wanted to make sure that was
thought
clarified.
Glasses
there.
Would help. Dyslexia still creeps up. So, all right. Sorry. Easement or encasements, not easements.
I would move the consent agenda be approved.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. More discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve. Next on the agenda is the regular agenda, and this is where we would hear comments from the public and requests for future agenda items relative to the Board of Supervisors. Seeing none, I'll just say that we've got a rather full agenda today, and we have a few timed events, so we'll try and squeeze things in periodically to cover the things we need to, but if I interrupt you, it's not to be rude, it's just because we have a timed item. So just throw that out there. So if I cut you off in mid-sentence, it's because of time come across. All right, let's start with committee reports, building and grounds.
Nothing.
Equalization.
We set it all up in the equalization meeting.
So that'll be July 10th at 1 p.m.
Hearing protests.
Just writing that down again. Finance, insurance. Byron.
Finance, we talked a little bit about maybe some of the things that are going to start coming up for the budget and the budget process, and we're going to start arranging some meetings for some of the committees with department heads and other people in Dom and get together and start trying to figure out the budget for next year, what was spent this past year, and then use those numbers. Some of the things we talked about is that the road bond, we need to make sure that's all accounted for in this next budget. And one of the other things is, too, I know we've been working on Hickory Road quite a bit. Need to figure out or how we incorporate that or what we do there. Also, we talked, I gave some numbers out to some of the different areas. What maybe we were, me looking through all the last, I don't have the one with our, what, Lori will give us some numbers here in another week or so or 10 days with all of our expenses, all of our money, where we're at. And then based on that, we'll start using the budget. So the financial statement I had from 2 weeks ago, some of the things we went over that maybe the budget looked like we were off a ways or not, and tried to explain why, tried to come up with ideas why. We visited with the committee at about 10 different things there, trying to look at some of them. What Rock in the County, we were over budget, but we understand why. You know, Gravel and Borrow, we were under budget. Armor coating, we didn't spend. We've had several discussions about that with Galen, and hopefully how we can maybe incorporate that so that we could next year do twice that amount. And visiting with things about why with that. The other thing is insurance, and are we talking about that later to prove
the restatement?
The restatement. 7 years we've been in this program, so we'll come up and visit about the restatement and insurance part later, because that's up for approval.
That's it.
Is there? Did we have an employee meeting for insurance?
Oh, thank you, Gary. Thank you. We had last Tuesday. We had an employee meeting with Amber and the other two guys,
Lowe and Brad.
For insurance, had somewhere between 70 and 75 people attend for the two meetings. A lot of good questions. Visit a little bit about Lowell and Brad tried to explain a little bit about how the new healthcare system maybe will affect us next year. From my perspective, I thought it was a real good meeting. I know after the first meeting, there were four or five people. Amber kept commenting, "You guys have questions or you have different things you need help with, you know, let me know." After the first meeting, there were four or five people up there, and after the second group came through, there were six or seven or eight people up there visiting with her. I know Dawn's had conversation with Amber since then, how she's been working with those and trying to work through things. And because of that, she is going to try and our prescription part of that. She's going to try and come up with and basically – Don can explain it. Give us an idea of if we're getting our money's worth out of it.
We haven't had an audit
for
several years, and so that was one of the questions that she had is should she perform an audit along with the health insurance and just give us some figures.
Right.
And so when I talked to Myron, he said, yeah, he thought that'd be a good thing to present.
And I know some of the questions some of you have had over the last year or so, in my mind, have related to something like that. Are we really... Is this company that's doing our program, are we really getting our maximum amount out of there? And I think this is what Amber kind of is going to start working on, and hopefully in the next month, or I don't know, she didn't say how long, by September, probably hopefully
well,
have an idea.
I imagine when she presents our figures for the rates on the insurance,
the rates.
We'll have the audit.
Sometime there in early September, they told us they'd have the rates, know what our insurance adjust up or down. You hear some, I think Brad made the comment, some of the insurance companies have raised the rates dramatically, but his comment at the meeting was for the 50 and under groups especially. And the reason for that is, or his explanation was, because of the unknown of this healthcare system coming in. They don't know. You know, you have an idea what the cost is, but Brad and them have said several times, they go to one meeting, they hear one thing, they go to another meeting, they hear another thing. The only thing they can tell you for sure is that nobody has a good, firm handle on it yet, including the government, you know, and that a lot of things will be worked through in the coming months or year or whatever. Brad's told us several times that the good thing about Gage County is we have to have everything in place by our renewal, which is next September 1st. So a lot of these companies, if you have a renewal January 1st, you're more up, you theoretically are supposed to be up to speed then, which we're fortunate. There will be 9 months there, which a lot of these issues hopefully will be worked through, and we won't have to deal with them as much. You know, there'll still be changes, which we don't know. There'll still be how do we do this or how do we handle this, but they did say, so far what they've seen, the rate increases haven't been as much for the bigger companies. It's been the smaller companies because of how they've had to adapt and not really have had to be on some of these insurance programs and stuff. So they've had some pretty good rate increases, what they've seen so far. So
I know a couple of years ago we modified the deductible. We saw a pretty good drop in our premium. So some of that we may want to look at again. If the rates really take off, somewhere to bring those down a little bit, assume a little more risk. So we and some of that will be passed on to the employees as too. So if we get to that point.
Anything else, Don? Or?
Not really. I think most of it's just the unknown right now that we're dealing with. There's calculations to determine whether you're a small, which we know we're a large.
We're large. Group, we're so. Greater than 50.
Yep. Right. But you don't actually even go with 50 employees. There's a calculation that you have to use for people who are under 50, it has to do with how many part-time, how many hours they work. There's a calculation that actually goes into that. So you might have actually under 50 employees, but you full-time, but you have part-time. That's going to throw you into a large group because of the number of hours. So it's
and one of the
a
things
lot of figures.
Then we think visit about is the calculation on part-time people.
That's going to
we're going to have to really watch that because if I know. Over here at the jail, there's been a time or two where an employee has worked over 30 hours part-time, you know. There's some guidelines here.
Yeah, the calculations on that, which we've started doing some of that in my office, where you have to take a picture of at least 3 months to a 12-month period and see how many hours that they've worked, and there's a calculation that you have to use on that, not yeah. just a strict 30-hour, but sometimes they go over. So then if it averages out and it calculates out, then they're going to be required.
We have there may be a situation come up where we may have an employee or something that they happen to work enough part-time hours of overtime that for a year or something, they may be classified as a full-time. And the reason that catches you is then you have to supply health insurance for them. So trying to watch those things, Don's office is, and then hopefully you don't get caught, but you may end up having an employee that would qualify. And
yeah. Any discussion about high deductible plans? I know some organizations, I know the one I work for, we instituted a high deductible plan.
For certain employees or all of them?
Offered for all employees, high deductible plans.
We haven't had any, not with
ours is $7,500 out of pocket, and that's 100% coverage after that. But the monthly premium is really low.
Is a lot less.
So you figure out what a family monthly benefit would be about $550, and so then there's a deductible on top of that. So then you're allowed to set up an HSA, which you can. It's post tax dollars and a gross tax free. I don't know if that's ever a lot of places are doing that. I don't know if that's something we should look at to offer.
We have visited longer ago, but it was before you were on, I believe, with the HSAs.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be a qualifying plan, and it's got to be a high deductible plan. But
I think once they get the rules finalized, then people can start doing some serious planning. Right now, Washington has no clue, and we're up to 20,000 pages of regulation. So wait until it's 40,000, and it may be done.
Well, that's what I think Brad said. He said right now, if you. The original healthcare system came out with about 2 inches of paperwork, and he said right now, he says if you'd lay the paperwork, it's between 3 and 4 feet high, that the healthcare is come up with all these extra things. So, and then a lot of it was federal government thought that with Medicare and everything, most of the states would want to do their own plans, and I know Nebraska ended up not. The government was not expecting that, had nothing in place to handle that, and now they're scrambling to, according to Brad and them, they're scrambling to hire insurance people to help set that up for the government, which they weren't expecting. They just thought all the states would take it and run because they'd want to control their own costs and everything. The states started looking into it and said, no, there's too many unknowns, too many other things here. We're not going to do it, which Nebraska ended up doing, which, excuse me, right now it looks like might be a very good decision. You know, so like I said, there's so many unknowns yet. Brad almost thinks his comment was, he says, I'm not sure they may extend this period of maybe a year before they implement it. Some reports you hear in the press or in the news, I guess, is no, it's going in, and then they're going to just deal with them as they go forward. So, don't know.
It's 9:00. We will move to our first timed event, which is the Veterans Honors Program. So I'll ask Phil Dittbrenner, the Veterans Service Officer, to come forward and please present our veteran that we're honoring this month.
Good morning. At this time, it's my pleasure and honor to introduce Everett McAtee. A little bit about Everett. He served in the United States Army with the 20th Infantry. He joined the service in August of 1942, and he separated in November of 1945. He served in the Pacific Theater of Operations from September of 1943 and came home on November 8th of 1945. During his time in the service, he was a combat infantryman, squad leader, and a sergeant. He was awarded the Asiatic Pacific Service Medal, Purple Heart with an oak leaf cluster. For those of you who don't know, that means he was injured twice while in combat. Bronze Star Arrowhead, which means that he was involved in one of the invasions. And Pacific Theater, American Service Medal, World War II Victory Medal, and a Bronze Star Medal. So on behalf of the Gage County Board of Supervisors and the Veteran Service Office, Everett, we'd like to thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And present you with this. You got something you'd like to say?
No, I don't like to talk.
Not much for talking. Well, we appreciate your service and everything you've done, and if you'd like to say something about your service or anything, we'd be more than happy to listen.
I have decided that I had chance to serve in the service. That's about it.
All right. Well, we appreciate that very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
What did he bring along there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I show this to the camera?
Yeah.
This is a shadow box that somebody must have put together for Everett. Or Everett, did you put that together for yourself?
Yeah, they put it together right here in town.
Oh, they put it together for you here in town.
Yeah.
But this has his unit badge, the 20th Infantry, his combat infantry badge, all of his medals, including his Bronze Star Medal, and a picture of you taken, what, last week? Was that picture taken last week?
No, about 3 days
before I went into service.
3 days
before.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, it says you were 21 years old in that picture.
Not quite yet.
Not quite.
He said that's a good vibe there.
About 23, I guess.
Yeah. All right.
This is just a small gift from us.
Thank you.
Wonderful to meet you. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Where's he from?
You know, I'm not sure.
Where's that one?
I assume the one in Reddit's daughter. She worked on the housekeeping at USDC.
Okay. Matt, well, should I ask him, where's he from now? Or?
He's from, I talked to Phil yesterday about the gentleman.
You're going
to
be actress, or?
I think he's in Wymore Good Sam. I think
Wymore Good Sam.
I'm thinking Wymore. I think it's Wymore.
I think that's where he's from. All right. Well, let's probably have time here. Let's receive the recommendation from Planning and Zoning Commission on the special use permit number 2013-3 for the construction of a Verizon wireless telecom tower that we have a timed public hearing at 9:30, but we can hear.
Okay.
This is,
good morning, everybody. This is a special use permit. You should have gotten a packet that I think Nancy prepared. This is for a Verizon wireless telecommunications tower. It's in section 34. It's the northeast quarter of 34. The land is currently owned by Bev and Brad Stake in an A1 district. It does allow for a telecommunications tower, and it has to be done through the special use permit process. So the application came to us March 30th, and then we held our hearing on May 9th. Jeff with Verizon presented us the project, and he is here today. So when our regulations were written with the assistance of Hannah Keelan, we studied the Telecommunications Act in 1996. That act granted the FCC exclusive jurisdiction over certain aspects of those services. So when we wrote our regs, we had those guidelines in mind, and those everything in the guidelines had to be included in the application which Verizon has submitted. Some of those things were things like design, the siding, camouflaging, the tree cover, also propagation maps, and then they also had to list a 3-mile radius of any other towers that were in the area. As they researched that, we, Gage County, had to set the setbacks. And so what we did was for setbacks, we went with the total height from the ground on up to the total highest point to the tower plus the 75-foot setbacks. So that would make this tower about 383 feet as a minimum setback from the center of the road. When you review our comprehensive plan, you'll see that one of our goals in the comp plan emphasizes to provide adequate public utilities and services to both existing and to the future of things that are needed in both the agricultural area and the residential area. So most of the people, the individuals in that Philly and Virginia area, will tell you that there's a definite need for cell tower and cell coverage. So at our hearing, we heard one opposition to it. That opposition was from a landowner, Ron Hasley. Mr. Hasley owns 8 acres with a residence that measures 300 foot directly south of an existing tower, and that tower has the is housing the Southeast Co-op's radio system right now. That tower was built in the 70s, and so it's been sold 3 times since its existence. Mr. Hasley's biggest concerns were addressed towards the radio frequency safety and the effect that it has on public health, stating that his family that resides in the house there has had some health issues. He also addressed the valuation of the surrounding structures and the properties and also asked why the applicant could not use the existing tower instead, which is just right across the road from the property. With respect to Mr. Hasley, if the public health and safety of the radio frequency was his main concern for his opposition, then using the existing facilities doesn't make a lot of sense to the commission. So, in fact, that proposed site is about 4,870 feet away from the residence of Mr. Hasley. Verizon did confirm at the hearing that they looked at the tower. However, because of the age and the design of that tower, it would not support the 3 and 4G specifications that they need to make transmission with. So Mr. Hasley also provided us with an OET study. I think that's in your packet, too. It's a bulletin report, and if you have that report in your packet, and if you want to turn to page 17 of that report, I would direct you to the bottom paragraph addressing that local and state governmental rights for radio frequency exposure. Again, it's on page 17 of the report. But what section 704, when we studied that Telecommunications Act, it states no state or local government or instrumentally thereof may regulate the placement, construction, and the modification of personal wireless service facilities on the basis of the environmental effects of radio frequency emissions. Again, that's on page 17 of that report. Furthermore, if you read into that report, when you get under cell towers and PCS transmissions results, the FCC studies result in exposure levels on the ground that are typically thousands of times below safety limits. So those safety limits were adopted by the FCC. At the time, our board acknowledged that the 3G and the 4G technology is very important as we advance into technology. That only not includes our wireless phones and our smartphones, but it also includes our tablets, our e-readers, our e-notebooks, our notebooks, our laptops. And that's also, they're all used in our homes, in our residences, businesses, our school system, and even in agriculture, the GPS guidance systems using smartphone apps. So based on our findings, we do recommend approval of the tower. So questions?
I'll start. I got the first question.
All righty.
Okay. We have regulations that we set up in our planning and zoning. Correct.
That's right.
But then there's a statement here that says we can't regulate that. Is that am I reading that correct? Help me understand.
It was written in reference to always going off to the guidelines of the FCC, the staying current within the Telecommunications Act. Whenever there are any revisions made to that act, that we always follow the FCC's guidelines, and so we would rewrite the application guidelines based upon that if anything ever came up. To this day, based upon the reports that we've seen, we have not seen any different. So that's the application process that they went through.
So our regulations are concurrent with federal standards?
As of right now, they are. Any other questions? Feel free to ask questions.
Just for the record, since you're the chairperson of the P&Z committee, yeah, to the best of your knowledge, Lisa, has all the requirements of Article 6 dealing with a special use permit been performed?
In yes.
In other words, the posting of the property, the publications, and all that stuff.
That is correct.
Okay.
The one item that they submitted by a email was a overview that is required, and that was done by email, and we have that.
Okay.
So now everything has been supplied. Nancy is not here. As you know, she is on vacation.
Right.
So.
And that's why I'm asking you this, typically to ask the administrator. But the other thing, and I passed out a little packet was to the board that basically looks at guidelines, and I know the P&Z group also looked at those same guidelines. So just a statement that, in fact, the Planning and Zoning Commission did look at the guidelines that are in, I think it's Section 5 and Section 6. Article 5 and Article 6. Okay. I just wanted that for the record.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, 6.5 is our guidelines, right. And it's 9 pages long. So lucky for the applicant.
We could go by one point by point, but I thought it'd be a little quicker.
Was it a unanimous vote in P&Z to approve?
We had one abstaining, and that individual owns a property right next to the proposed project, so he abstained. That was Jeff Frerichs. So otherwise, it was unanimous. So
I've got a P&Z recommended approval of this. Roger, you've looked this all over and you see no problems with approving this?
No, I mean, basically, the planning and zoning, it starts with the administrator, goes through the logistics and make sure that the height and the distance from the road and all that stuff, working with the applicant, which again, as you see from your packet, is a very detailed with engineering and all of the stuff that the board would require. Then it's referred to Lisa and her committee, who then go over it, have a public hearing, take input, both pro and con, and then make a recommendation to this board. We then have another, as we're doing today, have another hearing, and once that's done, there will be a motion to either approve or disapprove based upon the similar recommendations that the P&Z folks looked at. So at this point, everything legally has been done. Now it's a matter of policy decision by this board. And again, you've got very strict guidelines. So, if the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, according to what Lisa and the applicant present, normally it would be approved.
Thank you.
But you do have to allow, Mr. Hasley, we'll bring some points. I saw he's in here, so he'll probably address the board, too, with his concerns.
Okay.
And at 9:30, we'll have the public hearing. This is just to hear the recommendation from Planning and Zoning. And just as a note, and I've spoken with Lisa about this, Roger, as well, I think what I'd like to do when we have public hearings on items like this, we gain so much information in the day of the meeting. And then sometimes we're asked to make decisions in 3, 4, 5 minutes. So what I'm proposing is to not call for approval or disapproval of the resolution. We will hold this off for 2 weeks. So if you want to go out and look at the site, you want to gather more information. So as we hear things today, we're not trying to make decisions like that. That's my opinion. Unless there's a huge amount of opposition, it's not time sensitive, and it's something that
I appreciate that being able to have a little time to
in the future you're going to propose that or propose this, that starting
today. I've spoken with Roger about that, and it's not time sensitive. So basically, we're here today, and if we want to seek out some more information, if you want to Google it or whatever you want to do, go out, and that'll give us more time to do that. Because a lot of these decisions we make, they're long-standing. So unless there's a huge amount of opposition, we'll start that today. So my plan is to not call for a motion, but we will hear everybody today. Yes, Terry.
Matt, I kind of agree with what you're saying there. Lots of times we're asked to vote on something that it's we've got it in our packet, but we hear a lot of information afterwards. If it's not time-sensitive, like you said, if this isn't, I'd appreciate that too.
I think the only thing I suggested to Matt was if you are contacted after the meeting, make sure you bring that information back to the full board in 2 weeks when you're going to consider the vote so that everybody gets a chance to share that. I know some people don't like to come before a board and talk, but that information really needs to be passed on to the full group here so you consider all aspects of any given permit application.
Got another question for Lisa. I guess the special use permit, the reason they need one, the height of the tower or because we're going from ag land to something else? What is generally the reason here?
It's because it's a telecommunications tower. All telecommunications tower, anything with the SS, a height of 100 foot, requires a special use permit.
Okay.
Especially telecommunications because there's a lot of things that we have to double check with the FCC, the airport authority, hazardous waste. All those things have to be checked. And so this just makes sure that application and the county's behalf is well underway. So I did pass around an overhead map, Matt, that they're passing. I just did an overhead and did some measurements. Those aren't exact, but those are using the GPS system on our website. So certainly the commission's position is that what's ever best for the applicant and for Gage County, if you feel that you need to wait, that's fine with us. So, okay.
Thank you, Lisa. 13 minutes here. Let's hear from Jim Spangler. We usually make you wait the whole meeting.
Saying I'm a man of few words and I can get this done in 13 minutes.
You got a termination time.
I did send you all a packet. I discussed with Judy.
Thank you, Jim.
Glad you pulled me up, man. I'm not ready to grab that
box of donuts there.
Hand, so.
First of all, what do you want? You want me to do my quarterly report first and then move on to the... Okay.
We'll run right then. Yep.
First of all, thank you for one of your last meetings. You renewed the contract that the county has with the Chamber and Tourism, and I think it's been a good marriage, and it's worked well, and I look forward to working again for the future. I just listed my activities. I'm not going to read them off necessarily. I just want to stress that I've been trying to get out into all the communities of the county as time goes on. I think it's important that every town in Gage County feels a part of Gage County Tourism. I saw Matt at Pickerel Picnic here a few weeks ago, and I know I'm going to try to make it up to Cortland Fest, if I can promote that. It's on June the 29th, and in fact, the Friday night before, I think they're showing a little movie out in the park there.
And next year, Jim, I would encourage the tourism group to get a lawnmower in the downhill.
Okay.
You're welcome to drive it.
I thought I could be a little tugger, maybe, but And then on Adams for their Independence Day celebration, it's coming up on July 6th, exactly. So now, Matt, if the County Board of Supervisors would like to form a mud volleyball team, I know you can register on site in Adams. So.
Touché. Okay.
Then I saw Steve here. I know we have Gage County Fair coming up July 24th through the 28th as well. So if you look at the page on lodging tax, it has, you know, it's very comparable really to last year. I would say this past month was the 2% of the lodging tax was $4,645 compared to last fiscal year's, which was $4,121, so it was up a little. The previous 2 months had been down a little. Prior to that, it had been up some. So I think we're on target to be pretty similar to last year, and last year was a pretty good year. So as far as the Visitors Improvement Fund, that's the next sheet. We have one request that's been approved for the Rice Lodge and Conference Center that has not been reimbursed yet. We have not had invoices turned into us. And then we have one proposal today that we're bringing before you. Any questions at all as far as tourism in general?
Questions for Jen?
Okay. Then moving along then, we do have a request for funding from the Visitors Improvement Fund, if Larry Lottman wouldn't mind.
Jim, just a second.
Yes.
I'd like to put on file the quarterly report for tourism.
Motion made by Lytle.
Second.
Second by Byers. To submit the report on, place it on file. Vote. 7-0 to approve.
Sorry to interrupt you, Jim.
No problem.
Jim spoke here. We'll just, I need a motion to approve or disapprove Visitors Improvement Fund for the grant amount of $10,000 to Big Indian Archers for a tornado shelter. A motion to approve or disapprove.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Second by Byers. Discussion, Jim.
Yes. Convention and Visitor Bureau Advisory Committee recommends approval of this request. I know Big Indians had more and more visitors down there with the recent events of Oklahoma and whatnot. People are nervous when they go to an area and there's not a tornado shelter that's nearby, and that we feel that it's a worthy endeavor to help them construct that. But Larry will tell you just a little bit about that.
I'll keep it short. You got the pamphlet. You know all about our Big Indian Archers, so I won't go into any of that. But our proposal is for a 16-by-30 storm shelter restroom combination. It's going to have 8-inch poured reinforced walls with a concrete top with an I-beam down the center for support with pillars. And we're at Big Indian Lake down by Wymore, and this would just be a big asset to our facility down there. We got a public archery course down there, open to the public. We got over 2,000 archers last year that come into our shoots, and we've had over 16 states come in with archers over since our beginning in 2004, and so we get regulars from Iowa, Missouri, and Kansas, and of course Nebraska, but we'd appreciate your vote on this. And
one comment here was that you hoped to have spring of 2013 to have the project completed. So have you started on it or not yet?
No. Okay. I've got all the plans, but okay. That was, you know,
that was the goal originally.
Everything went a little slower than we was planning.
Yep.
But, we do have the funding if we can get this grant to go ahead with the facility.
And would this be accessible from the other side of the lake from the camping areas?
Well, they'd have to drive around.
Have to drive around.
I believe they got a plan in for another shelter on the other side of the lake too. They've got that. The NRD's got that in the works, but I don't know where that stands.
And that was part of the discussion that was had with the group was that these people would, if they're over there at an archery shoot and the tornado shelter's on the other side of the lake, I don't know how familiar everybody is with Big Indian, but you would have to drive clear around. It ends up being
2 or 3 miles.
2.5 miles, I believe, to get over to the tornado shelter. And that's one of the reasons that this is a critical structure for these folks.
We've had as high as 430 shooters at one of our weekend shoots, and so it's, you know, it's a well-used facility. And
well, even other than a tornado shelter recently, you know, the Boy Scouts with the lightning, there's probably an opportunity. You know, when you're out there, sometimes that lightning comes up.
Yep.
Well, travel, can travel 10 miles. Where's Mark? 10, 15 miles or something.
Yeah, and last summer we had 325 Boy Scout. They had a big rendezvous or something out there with I don't know how many adults, but, you know, it's pretty scary when you think of all them people out there. And
yes, Kathy.
Okay, it says this will hold about 90 people. If you've got 430,
well, that's for the whole weekend. You know, it's come and go. They're not all there at the same time.
Okay. But, how often is this area used?
Well, it's used daily, but our archery shoots are once a month, April through September, for our regular competitive shoots. But the practice range and everything is open to the public year-round.
So how is the shelter accessed? Is it locked? Would there be somebody there to open that? Is it 24 hours a day? How do those work?
It'll be open. There will be a tornado door that, in case of a storm or tornado, that we can physically close it inside and to protect everybody.
But normally, it's just open, so
it'll be open all the time. Okay. Yeah,
I just didn't know how
because it's
going
to be a restroom combination with a shelter, so it'll be open all the time.
Yeah, that was Larry had the pleasure of coming back on two, three different occasions to the committee to discuss this, and they did a really good job of going through the plans and making sure everything was covered on this to make sure. And I know checked with Mark Mainz, and Mark was approving of the project and thought it was a good idea. And I think the structure was approved also under FEMA guidelines, I believe, wasn't it?
Not FEMA, that was the other one.
Okay.
It was.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But Mark was approving of the program there.
And in your packet, there's support letters from Mark and the NRD.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
All right. I have a motion and a second to approve. We have a recommendation from Jim Spengler from the visitors group. More discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve.
We thank you very much.
Just a couple of minutes before a public hearing.
We got a committee, maybe law enforcement committee or something. I don't care. Road bridge or
law enforcement.
We can cover law enforcement quick.
Can you?
Right. We're going to discuss it later.
That was close.
Could you go over that again, please?
HR and employee relations. So, well, I know Terry's pretty verbose, so we'll wait for Road and Bridge. I don't know. Actually, there's some legitimate we need to talk about, Ray Bond and Jay Spearman. Oh, look at the timing there. Not yet, but just on cue. Just a couple minutes here. Gus, do you want to introduce Shepherdson as the new guy? A couple of minutes here.
I promise this will be just a couple minutes.
Do that.
Lord Augustus and Gage County Sheriff. Today I have Tony Shepherdson with me. I think most of you have seen him already. I know him from the years. And then, of course, I think media had some articles on here a while back. But Tony was promoted to our jail director position about the first part of this month when Amber Mulbray resigned. Tony started with us in about, I think, 2000 as reserve deputy. And at that time, he'd been working at the Department of Corrections, where he was until we hired him full-time as a corrections officer and supervisor over there. In 2006, he was promoted to a deputy sheriff full-time. And in 2009, he took the investigator's position. He was there for about a year, then was promoted to sergeant for the road patrol in 2010. And then today, he did promotion for 2013 for the jail director. And during the process of interviewing everybody, we talked to Tony, and he said one of the things he liked about position was going to be a challenge. And I guarantee him that would certainly be right there for him, a challenge. So, and he's picking up the pace. He's learning it pretty quick. He has some background from the state corrections, so he's going to be a good asset for us. So, questions, I see.
We're moving right along. Okay. Challenge is there.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, we're just before the public hearing. Is there? Do we have a list for those who would speak for or against? We'll pass the form around. And you want to speak for or against, or you don't have any opinion but you want to speak, that's fine too. So just and really the only reason is just that we have somewhat of an order as we go through folks. So
yes, he did. Starting to worry me.
He is, huh?
It's like those calling opinion, like they do those phone telephones and 20% have no opinion. Why did you call in? I don't know. For or against? Whatever. Okay. 9:30, need a motion to open up a public hearing to hear support and or opposition for the public on the use a special use permit number 2013-3 for the construction of a Verizon wireless telecom tower facility located in the northeast quarter, section 34 in Philly Township. I need a motion to open up a public hearing.
So moved.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. Any discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0, we were in a public hearing. Discuss special use permit. We've heard the recommendation from planning and zoning. We'll wait until the list comes around. And just, even though we'll have your name on paper, just when you come up, name and address for the record, or your, whoever you're representing and what your interest is. Yeah, I guess we sit here and look at each other, or someone can look at the list and see first.
First one up is Jeff Skinner with Verizon.
Jeff Skinner from Verizon. They're the applicant.
Correct.
For the special use permit.
Good morning. Jeffrey Skinner, authorized Verizon wireless agent, Waukee, Iowa. As you all can see this morning from looking at your packets, Verizon proposes to construct a 300-foot self-support tower with an 8-foot lightning rod, bringing the total height to 308 feet per the diagram that you folks have in front of you. We laid it out initially in working with the county's ordinance, adhering to all the requirements moving forward from that starting point on. We've submitted everything requested from us, including laying it out to support an additional minimum of 2 carriers should they come along and want a co-location spot, and secured a sufficient enough ground space to also put those folks inside the compound. It would be lit required to the FAA requirements. We've checked into that already, and you can see those requirements on some of that very detailed information. There's 37 some pages of information. For security purposes, there's a 6-foot chain link fence with 3-strand barbed wire at the top to keep folks out. The compound itself is also lit at night with a stoop light for added protection. In setting it back, again, we've set it back from the main road that runs north-south, which is 162nd Road, over 638 feet, correct, 638.5 feet from the road, and over 340 feet from the property line to the south. Obviously, we are well in excess of any of those other property line setbacks with those distances. This tower itself would fill in a hole that currently exists. If there are folks who live around in that area, they will attest to the fact that the service out there is pretty poor at this point. What that would do would bring all that entire area online so that as you were traversing through there or sitting on your stoop, you could make a phone call or use your smartphone to get on the internet. A tower of that height, typically I get asked, well, what's the coverage range of it? Independently, if it stood alone, you're looking at 10 to 12 miles for a signal, a wireless signal at that height. This tower itself is slated to have all the current technology put on it, so you would have the 3G, 4G, LTE after installation is complete. At that point, I'm happy to entertain questions.
Any discussions from Mr. Skinner? Questions?
I will confirm what you said about the reception being very poor in that area, though. I will.
Absolutely.
Go through there. I know the agronomy plant there, a couple miles to the east, on the west, on the corner there of the highway. You can be right there, and you can't get reception.
Yeah. And I know initially when I worked the area, again, I have a Verizon phone, and it was pretty poor.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank
you.
Any
more questions? Next, Brad Stake. Name and address for the record, sir.
Brad Stake, 7113 615 Avenue, Burchard, Nebraska. I'm the landowner. Jeffrey contacted me a year ago in August. We got this started, and after all the paperwork going back and forth between lawyers and everything, we finally finished up about a week ago. There's a hole there. Jeff told me that they wanted to hit Philly, Crab Orchard, Lewiston, and Virginia. And I'm right in the center of it, I guess, for hitting them all. He's been real easy to work with. I hope you guys approve it. Thank you.
I guess before he walked off, did anybody have any questions for him? No. We know where you're at.
Oh. Yeah, I got one for
you.
You
do, Maya.
How come it's not in Pawnee County? No. No.
Ron Hasley. Name an address for the record, please.
Ron Hasley, 701 North 7th Avenue. Hey, thank you guys for allowing me to come up and talk today. I appreciate that. I really appreciate the move you took early this morning, Matt, for a two-week delay. That'd be great. I'll be really as quick as I can on this. I know time is limited. We're opposed to the tower. I believe there is a total lack of due process in visiting with the zoning board and everything. I don't believe we were properly notified or given enough time to do that. Lisa did indicate that they do file FCC guidelines. I think that process requires a 30-day notice. I do know that federal law.
But it, just for the record, it's the zoning laws control our procedure, not the FCC.
Right.
The FTC. And we comply with
it. But she quoted that they...
There are certain things that we have to adhere to.
Well, anyway, I'm gonna raise that issue that we were not properly notified. The other issue is a little bit troublesome to me, but maybe that's something you folks need to work out at a later date. In these hearings, you're only given 5 minutes in which to speak, and obviously this is not an issue that can be covered that quickly. There's a lot of data that's got to come in, a lot of people that need to be conferred with prior to. So the due process is the number one point right now. I recently requested from Don Hill and also from Nancy a complete file, of which I assume I got the other day. That file consisted of an application by Verizon, basically blueprints in regard to the tower, and I did receive a CD from the office from the hearing, and I wish that this board take judicial notice of all three of those items, I believe of which is already in your packet with the exception of the CD. I will place that on file. I will point out that at that hearing there was absolutely no one, with the exception of Brad, and I don't know that he brought up the fact of the tower being the cell phone reception, but he is the homeowner or the owner of the property in which the tower is going to be built. Otherwise, no one else was in favor of that tower that was at that meeting. So the is my understanding they're applying for a special use permit. Now, that is a little different than a variance. My understanding is a special use permit, you need to take consideration of the people around that area also. Lisa also indicated that studies were done by the FCC, Hazardous Waste, and FAA. I have no records, and I would ask them to place those studies on file, if indeed. Now, I don't know what you folks...
They're in your materials that you gave us.
Pardon?
They're in your materials that you gave PNZ and have also been distributed to this meeting. There are several references that there is...
Oh, that's on the FCC one?
It's the one you asked to be included.
Yeah, I've
so
provided the FCC one. There's also the hazard waste. I would imagine that would be DEQ runoff and so on and so forth. And the FAA would, of which I've got no reports on either one of those. So I'd ask that the group take notice of that. Now, Jeff briefly touched today and was in a little bit more detail during the other board meeting that there are gaps in the area, and he has received complaints, okay? And Myron, you did testify that there are gaps. I have four affidavits from individuals that I will place on file today that all have Verizon cell phones and will attest or affirm that there is good coverage in that area. So during my research, I found something very disturbing on that. I had to go to Verizon and ask them about their cell phones and their towers in the area. And they provided me, in the Philly and Virginia area, that they do have, actually there's no gaps in coverage, and they have excellent reception in that area. So I will place that on file with you. Folks, today the concern, if you can look, I'll just kind of show you the map, shows that they got good coverage with the exception of one white area way over here, okay, and that's about 100-yard radius over there. Now what they don't have, and maybe this is more what they're after, is the other map shows the 4 gig data. And that's what they're looking for here. We have all kinds of gaps, but it's certainly outside the area of the tower. I would think that they'd want to put their tower closer to that area right now. And that's more further east towards the Crab Orchard and so on area. So I'll submit that to you folks. Then I had to go to their competitor and talk to them a little bit, because that, my research was showing me that their federal law doesn't require that they have 100% coverage in any one area. It's just adequately covered. And obviously, by the evidence that we were able to receive from them, they're claiming they do. The other issue was that if a competitor has coverage in that area, it's not necessary on that particular site to be there. So I went to U.S. Cellular. They rate their areas best, better, good, and fair. And all the area around there is in the better, best, and good area. They have no gaps in the system whatsoever.
Ron, just a quick question. Those maps those things you're pulling up, would that be fair to say those are marketing items?
Actually, I received these from this one. I received direct from U.S.
But
Cellular.
If I see, if I go to any person that offers mobile phone coverage, they'll have a picture of Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And outside of places in the sand hills, there isn't very many gaps on those particular items. But those are marketing tools, aren't they?
Well, I don't know. They knew what I was looking for. I was looking for tower coverage in the area.
Okay, but
whether
what I'm asking there, before you put stuff, ask the chairman to put stuff into the record, I just want to make sure what it is.
Yeah.
That isn't from engineers or experts in telecommunications.
No,
that's a marketing tool.
Well, this is from the company themselves.
Okay. But just so we're understanding,
I would imagine
like
they had engineers and everything when they drew these.
You don't know that.
I don't know that.
Okay,
but it is a reasonable doubt, and you know I need to shift the burden of proof from being one that we got coverage to one that, hey, maybe you're saying you don't, but actually you do. Obviously, the affidavits, all the individuals there were Verizon carriers, and they all had good coverage. So I, you know, when somebody comes up and says, "Oh, we got gaps and stuff," well, the gaps may be in the equipment and not in the towers themselves. And this is what the people at U.S. Cellular told me, that a lot of the problems that people are experiencing in gap coverage is low-grade phones themselves and so on and so forth. So you guys need to probably look at that a little bit. But I will place that also on file, if I may, Roger.
The affidavits?
Yeah, I got affidavits, too. And okay, I covered that.
Ron, just a second, sorry.
Can we ask who signed the affidavits? Can that go into...
Well, you'll have the affidavits. I'll set them on file.
I think we should make it a matter of public record. So why don't you tell us who the affidavits are?
Okay, the affidavits are from myself, Vicki Hasley, Tiffany Hasley, and Ray Goopser.
Who was the last one?
Several members of your family. There are three of those are from your family.
Three of those are from my family, yes.
And then the other two are?
The other one would be Ray Goopser.
Okay.
There's been no evidence placed on file, unless you folks have it, that an alternate site hasn't been looked at. I did visit with U.S. Cellular. They have a tower 3.5 miles east of Philly. It's a 450-foot tower. It does have the capability of, quote-unquote, piggybacking another company. So that would be, actually, that'd be a little bit closer to what their data area request is requiring, and that one is already up. So there, unless they have evidence of alternate sites being looked at, I'd ask that they place those on file today. Also, I would want them to place on file any complaints of the cell phone area. Complaints, as you know, Roger, have to be in writing, and there's no evidence that I could find of anybody making a complaint in that area except for verbal.
Okay, just so I've got a clarification. Again, there's a procedure that's being followed up to this point with our planning and zoning regs, okay? Now, all this other stuff that you're bringing up about, you know, complaints involving Verizon or anything else, we're not required to go out there and check that stuff, number one. No. Number two is, you know, they have to meet the burden of the application, which has guidelines that the board will have to review, as did the Planning and Zoning Commission when they made a recommendation, okay? But, you know, some of this stuff, and again, I guess to move along.
I'm just about done.
What's your objection to this tower at this site? That it could be someplace else, because we could build a master tower for Nebraska that planes may have trouble with. That's not the issue before this board. We're very limited here. Mm-hmm. Verizon's made an application for this tower at this location to service their customers. Okay? What's your objection to that specific issue?
Is it not the obligation of the board to protect, under equal protection law, the people that are in that area and their properties versus Verizon?
That's what the Planning and Zoning Comprehensive Plan does. Okay, it's been approved, gone through the process. So we're applying that to this particular case.
Has that been approved as of today?
It doesn't. It was approved in what, 19?
Okay, I'm talking about this specific issue today, Roger. I do not believe it's been approved by Planning and Zoning by this board.
There was a recommendation to this board.
Recommendation? You haven't voted on it yet.
Correct. That's the process as it comes to Planning and Zoning to this board.
All right. If I can keep moving, because I know others want to talk. No evidence of an alternate site. There is a tower there. U.S. Cellular has indicated they do provide the 911 service. So that should take care of that. Devaluation of property, I'm going to be real brief here. Studies have shown that when these towers are in an area, there's a devaluation of property, okay? You cannot take, my understanding, a Verizon tower or any tower, for that matter, and have them be above a property owner in that area. So, also, if I can point out, going back to due process, I believe the code says that occupants have to be notified. And I noticed that during the board hearing, they said that only the owners need to be. So that was one of my concerns also. There are empty houses in the area there that may or may not be due to the towers themselves or proposed towers, but there are some vacancies in that area. They seem to either not be able to sell or not be able to rent those properties. I don't know because I have not been able to interview those individuals as of yet in depth. They did have some concerns on the tower itself. Historical sites. Philly Stone Barn is within a mile or so of this proposed site, maybe just a little further. There's been no study by the Historical Society placed on file that I am aware of that indicates that they have their approval. Issues with migratory birds, migratory flight patterns. There is lakes in that area, large ponds, and studies have shown that it does affect the migratory birds and also bees. There's an in-depth study over in Europe on cell phone towers and bees. Lightning strikes. I wish you guys would write this down. Look up the term reverse lightning strikes. Very concerning to me. It's actually where instead of the lightning coming down, hitting the tower, spreading out, it actually pulls electromagnetic field from the ground and shoots it up through the tower and then sprays it over everybody in the area. Good study on the internet about that. And that was done in the observatory in Colorado. I'm going to suggest, folks, because I do want to get along with these people, a 90-day continuance that they can maybe answer some of these questions that I have. I like the 2 weeks. I like 90 days better. I want to have a good working relationship with them. I do need some additional data. Now, if you guys have something more than what I'm presenting, I wish you would present it to me, but I did ask for a complete file. I wish they would look at an alternate site or make compensation. I'm going to ask, okay, and the commission here, or you board, to review the bulletin 56 and 65 that Lisa referred to earlier in her study. And the Telecommunications Act 1996, specifically 704, okay? And then, Roger, for you, the Supreme Court has just recently ruled on a case here. It's Koontz, K-O-O-N-T-Z, versus St. John's. The crutch of the Supreme Court ruling there is property owners cannot be forced to surrender their rights. Okay.
Well, and the property owner here isn't indicating he's being forced to anything. He said he had a good relationship with Verizon. They reached an accord.
Right, but you're asking other property owners under the special use permit to surrender their rights or values to their property or their enjoyment to the aesthetic views. And
you understand that's why we have our planning and zoning regulations that have been complied with.
So, I mean, I think that Supreme Court ruling would fall under that. So I'll go ahead and submit the affidavits to Don. The maps. Is it necessary to do another DVD? But I will submit that. This is the full hearing that we had the other day. Roger, I would ask that you look on notices. We were not properly notified within time. So,
Ron, if you'd like to, every packet that we have, everything we have in our packet as well as what you want to submit, we can set it on the corner there, and we'll compile a file, and I'll call for a motion at the end of the public hearing, and we'll submit everything to file, so it'll be public record. Everyone's open to
have it. Good. So I'll have a copy of what you guys got?
Yes.
You already do.
You may have it. I don't know if you have this or not, but at the end I'll call for a motion to accept everything on file. So we'll just start a pile over there.
Okay.
Anything that wants
Very
to be
good.
Submitted, we'll add it to it. And then
right.
it'll be public record.
And with that, thank you guys very much.
I've got a question.
Yes,
Roger. A little bit ago you just said you wish they would look for an alternate site or provide compensation.
Right.
For what?
A devaluation of property.
For landowners in the area or...
Well, obviously, we don't have too many landowners that are aware of this in that area. I don't know if any more will come forward, and I certainly can't speak for them, Myron. And I just think I would ask for mediation between us and Verizon to work through those issues. I mean,
You want what?
Mediation.
Between?
Yeah, mediation process. And that could be done very simple between Jeff and myself.
Wait a minute. Which
that you can do with him? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if he's going to jump up and down.
Well,
that
I guess what I'm asking is some time to do that.
Well, there's been this process has been going. You heard the testimony. It's been going for quite a while.
Yeah.
Let's
cut things quick. We were not properly notified, so therefore we're going to.
Well, that's fine. I mean, you say that, but the proof's in the pudding, okay? The publications were in the paper. People have known about this for some time. And
That'll be placed on file, too, Roger.
The property is if I don't have cell service out in some, where I'm going to move, I'm not really excited about that property. If I have cell service, that property becomes much more valuable.
Okay, but see, U.S. Cellular is saying they have cell service there and no problem. Switch your carrier.
Interest?
You know?
I mean, we've got to consider who's
I will place on file, though, the notice that I did receive and that it was not timely received. Okay?
Thank you, Ron. Yeah, we'll just start a pile of it on the corner of the table. And
okay.
I'll call for a motion to submit everything.
I'll go back and get it all set up and then set it over there.
May I have time to respond just a few of those pertinent matters before we...
Let's go through. Maybe give me an opportunity to go through and we'll do last call here.
Thank you.
Vicki Hasley?
Yes.
Would you like to speak? Even though I called it out, name and address for the record, please.
Vicki Hasley, 701 North 7th Beatrice.
Thank you.
I just want to say that I am co-owner of this property 1 mile north of Virginia with my husband, Ron. And I just want to point out that I did not receive a notice in the mail for the planning and zoning meeting. And my other comment was my husband has an affidavit that he's going to submit to you with all my concerns in it. And I just want to testify that it's true and accurate. And that's all.
I got a question. Maybe I should ask Ron. I guess I'm not familiar with the property, so describe the property a little bit.
It sits directly 1 mile north of Virginia on the corner.
Farm ground, acreage.
It's an acreage.
Acreage with a house.
With a house
that's livable, or somebody lives there.
Yes, it's a 5-bedroom house that is currently rented. Someone is living in it. Yes.
Thank you.
It's Kathy.
How far is this house from the proposed cell tower?
I don't have the diagram for the cell tower,
but
I think it's within a half a quarter mile or a quarter
no.
mile.
It's a 7, if you take your GPS measurement from where they're proposing, it's about 7/8 of a mile.
4,000. Yeah, 4,820 feet on the map that Lisa has GPSed here.
Okay, and then who is living there? Are they protesting this also?
Ray Gubser and his wife Judy are living there. And they are also have an affidavit that they are submitting as well.
Okay, thank you.
You might want to look at the affidavit. She's referencing a document that she's affirming. You may, as a board, want to look at that so you can ask her questions about her statements in that affidavit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason when we receive these things, to give us an opportunity to look at those. So we'll have more discussion in 2 weeks. So if
But if she's not here, you're not. The board's not going to be able to question her.
Yeah, we don't have a public hearing in 2 weeks again.
Okay. Well, let's. Okay. Tiffany Hasley, would you like to speak again? Name and address for the record.
Tiffany Hasley, 701 North 7th. I am against the cell tower, and I am also with my brother and heir to that farm. And I also have an affidavit that I would like to submit, place on file. And everything in it I attest is true and accurate to the best of my knowledge.
Tiffany, you just... Yes, sir. You just referenced it as a farm, isn't it? How many acres are on that?
I do not have the exact numbers. I apologize.
Okay. That's okay. Thank you.
That sounds about right. Yes, ma'am.
Are you objecting to this? I'm a little confused on health issues or on valuation issues.
Well, I believe there are a number of concerns. My personal biggest concern is the aesthetic value. I know also that if any member in my family or other tenant that there's a cell tower, you can see right out the window. And I don't know if it's a concern for any of you, but for us, we move to farms and acreages to have the nice view. And, you know, I know in Colorado they pay big bucks for that, so... We would be, I mean, I know it's just humble Nebraska, but we like our farm views. So a big cell tower right out my window, blinking a light in the middle of the night.
The acreage is on the next one over. That's why.
Can you put a value on that?
I couldn't figure that out.
So that's just my concern.
I was
to inherit it with a cell tower, that to me would.
That's what I was looking at.
That would devalue it, in my opinion.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is there a light on that the co-op tower that's currently in existence?
I am told there is a light on the tower that blinks.
So. You're not sure?
Well, I have not seen it at night, so.
Okay.
But.
The law requires that they have a light up there, so unless it burns out, it better be there.
Yeah. Unless the light bulb's out, so, but.
Okay, questions.
Any other questions, or may I return?
Questions for Tiffany? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just as a point of process, without, again, going through everybody, everyone's had an opportunity to speak, does the board have any questions for any needing of any clarification? So I won't have it come back up because then we'd have to go through everybody. If anybody on the board has any questions for Lisa or anybody for the public hearing.
I didn't know they were going to speak again, but I had a question for Lisa because Ron said something about occupants are supposed to be notified or owners are supposed to be notified. Or you said somebody said something about that and didn't know who was supposed to be notified and how was that handled.
That's our procedure is that landowners within 1 mile specifically of the proposed project have to be notified by mail. We do not notify renters because many times we don't know who those renters are. It's up to the landowner to notify the renter. Then again, we do publicize by due process the same as what you do in the public notification process. So, landowners within 1 mile. Yes.
Okay, also if there are two owners listed, such as a Mr. and Mrs., would you send out two notices or one notice?
Deborah is here that helped with that process.
Yes. Deborah?
Typically on the assessor's site, if those two owners are listed together at the same address, those two owners are listed on the envelope together because that's how they're listed at the assessor's office.
The question would be if the address was not current, you know, or a different box number that, you know, would need to be checked. But all of those were sent out, so that's our process.
And none were returned?
None for any return.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Any more questions of the board for anyone who spoke at the public hearing? Any more questions?
More
clarification? No, I don't. Well, just if they've got questions for them, we can ask them.
I've got one question for him. Okay. I guess Mr. Hasley had the maps supposedly where you had coverage or whatever. I guess you made the comment that not coverage. So what are you basing yours on?
I'm basing my knowledge off of an RF engineer who's taken the time and money within inside of Verizon to develop a plan to spend their hard-earned dollars to improve their coverage throughout the state of Nebraska and across the country. The tools that I saw from where I sat, Mr. Harris identified properly. Those are specifically coverage maps that are available online that he probably requested or pulled off the internet. I don't know which. He's free to do either or. And as we're aware, marketing maps are completely different than what's actually out there and available. I hate to say that, but it's true.
Well, that was one of my other, I guess, questions. Roger brought it up that way. I do, at least from my perspective, a lot of these companies will have a marketing out there. You have good coverage. I go back to the years where we actually had a bag phone so that we could have some coverage.
Yep.
Hey, we had coverage, but if you didn't have that bag phone with you, take it from the pickup to the tractor, you didn't have coverage.
Absolutely.
You know, so I mean, yes, you had. So that depends
absolutely
on interpretation or depends on.
Yep. And just for reference, for Verizon to develop a site from start to finish, which includes the lease, construction, my time and efforts, an RF engineer, in total, you're looking at just short of $500,000 to develop each one of these sites. It's not money that's wasted just because it's not needed or needed. Yeah, absolutely.
Any more questions for everybody? For anybody? Not everybody.
I'd like to address the comp plan because one of the things when we redid the comp plan was about technology. And so we heard a lot of verbal comments of issues that we had to stay with the technology coming up, especially in the technology of internet and phone service. And so that's what we based most of our comments, you know, came from us through our studies that we did in those areas. I heard from landowners. I'm a personal landowner 4 miles away from that site, and you do not have cell coverage. If you're out in the country, 911, you will not get it if you're only, you know, only on a cell phone. So, but.
Last comments, Ron.
I just ask that they go ahead and place the engineer report on file. That those are areas that we can look at. Also, in regard to notice, he indicated that both the husband and wife have to be notified, and on the envelope, I'll place in evidence that did not happen.
Okay. You place a lot of stuff in evidence. We haven't seen any of it. And typically, you bring it up and let the chairperson at least look at it, so that follow-up questions can be asked. What engineering study are you referring to? Is that the one in the packet? Are there the engineering drawings or what?
No, Jeff just indicated there was engineers that studied that.
Right. I mean, he's basically saying that the protocol at Verizon is to do that. That's not a matter of anything we can see. I mean, we can question Jeff about an engineering study, but just because, I mean, you've referenced a heck of a lot of stuff from the FTC, FCC, and I haven't seen any of it. I just want to make sure for the record.
So what I'll do is, if there's no more questions, I'm going to make a motion or a call for a motion to close a public hearing. A motion to close a public hearing.
I make a motion to close public hearing.
Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Setzer. Any more discussion? Seeing none, vote. And I'll call for a motion to place on file for public record all the documentation we have and anything else that shows up there on the corner of that table in the next 5 minutes we'll submit to public record. So this is for everybody to see, look at. All parties involved can look at it. Okay, if you need additional information and things that if Roger's asked for them to be put on there, this is why I think it's good we wait 2 weeks.
Matt, I'm not asking for it. You know, just because he references something, there's a lot of information that's given during the course of a public hearing that we're not asking the Federal Registry be a part of this record. I take it people don't typically come before this board and make comments about engineering studies that haven't been done. I don't know why Verizon would spend that kind of money on a tower that's not needed. Now, the factors that this board needs to look at are those I need you copies of. not FTC rulings or any of that stuff. They have to comply with that as well as FAA guidelines on height restrictions and flyovers. I don't know what the official term is, but I know you've had to go through that red tape.
And that's the part that I wanted to address. Right. They're required by the federal government to address both Nebraska State Fish and Game, the Department of National Fish and Wildlife. They do their own historical data surveys and requirements. It's all done behind the scenes.
So I'm not asking for any proprietary information. It's information that would be relative to the special use permit. We've had a recommendation. We've had a public hearing. If any additional information that you'd like the board to look at and place on public file, I need a motion to approve placing that on file.
So moved.
Moved by Setzer. Second. Second by Juergens. Any more discussion? We're going to have a lot to read. That's all right. That's good. Vote. 7-0 to approve. And we will hold any approval the next agenda item for the resolution related to this approval of special use permit, and that will be on the agenda in 2 weeks. Gus here, let's do... We're done with our timed items. All right. Let's go to Road and Bridge. We've got Jay Spearman. Well, you know what? Let's do Road and Bridge. Update.
Okay, everybody should have this packet of information information from the Road and Bridge. I'll just hit on a few of the highlighted ones. The Wymore Bridge, there's drilling, casing, and installation. Concrete being poured right now as we speak. Philly North project, all right away. Documents have been signed and will be paid in this pay period. So that's on its way again. We have longtime operator Bob Dorn is retiring as of July 1st. There'll be a reception for him Thursday at 2:30. He's a motor grader operator in the Wymore area. Good employee and has done the county a good job. We've hired a full-time mechanic. That was all posted in the records earlier. Galen is in the process right now with Mark Minnelli of sizing some major culvert work to be done. There's six projects that will be done, just depending on the size of removing six more timber bridges as we've done in the past and replacing this with culverts. Some of these are all the way up to 84, triple 84 culverts that we put in. That's something that will be on the schedule for this summer yet to get done. The mill head, just to report by the mill head that we did purchase for the county, it's Galen reported it's working excellent, you know, as far as he can mill out a patch of the blacktop area that's in bad condition, doesn't have to take out a full section, now can just mill out what he needs to repair the top of the road, and he said it's made things a lot quicker and a heck of a lot cheaper because we're not buying all that extra asphalt we need, we're just putting in what we need to on that, so I think that was a good purchase for the county. And we discussed road bond, you know, as far as how that went, where we're going to proceed, and we're going to talk about that here in just a little bit.
Did you talk about weed notices? I know we kind of kicked that around.
We not only weed notices, but as well as that, as far as the it's been a problem as far as the trees in the counties right away or townships right away. We've had quite a few complaints. We've sent out letters. Typically, we haven't had a lot of response back from the landowners. So we've decided that we've got to do something about it. It's a hazard. A lot of these roadways, there's limbs reaching out into the roadways. We've had numerous complaints. We've sent out numerous letters. Basically, no response is what Deborah sent out, quite a few of them this spring, no response. So within the next few weeks, I think, Deb, would you want to come up and give a address what you was going to do as far as paperwork and in the paper?
And well, I'm going to interrupt real quick, and I'll say that Terry's being very cordial here. We have provided notice. We have provided legal notice to these folks on the statutory responsibility that the landowners have to get the brush out of the way. It's a public safety issue. It's a nuisance. It's been an ongoing issue for years. Every township board meeting, we get cracked over the head with it. It's an issue. And it, with the size of the farm equipment that goes up and down these roads nowadays, it inhibits commerce potentially. So we're going to kick it up a notch, so to speak, take that from Emeril, and we're going to push this a little bit because it's something that needs to be dealt with. So as those complaints come in, we take them serious. And not that we haven't in the past, but it needs to be, because if it's not dealt with, the next year it's worse, and it's just this cascade. So you've been very nice, but you have to admit, in the committee, we've had it.
Yeah.
It's got to be dealt with.
I agree.
Sorry.
Correct. And one of the things that we felt we probably need to do, a lot like we do our weed notice, we put that out in the spring and in the fall, is that we also put a tree notice that actually puts out the statute. Lets a landowner know, just like on a weed statute, that they're required to, by law, to take care of those trees and brush that's in that right-of-way, or if it's blocking drivers, or if we get around a curve and it becomes a safety issue, that they're responsible. And it probably give us some more teeth into it by putting it in the paper. We've not done that on the trees that I'm aware of, at least not since I've been here, putting it in there. And then that would give me an opportunity to talk to Roger on how, if we do take care of it, if we'll go the next step of putting it on their taxes if we have to handle it.
Well, there's a statute that specifically requires if it's not being addressed by the landowner, then it's kicked up to the county attorney's office for enforcement, because there's a statute that requires you to maintain that. So, I mean, you give them notice, unless you got letters back, they know that you know, if I have to play the bad person and file a criminal action, it has to be done, because the liability for the landowner is quite a bit, too.
Yes.
If we have an accident out there because of some either brush or limbs, whatever the case may be, hasn't been removed. And that's why the county is equally concerned to get those blind spots taken care of. I know we had some out there by Claytonia, and I think the landowner did go out.
And I guess the biggest thing to me, we've sent out quite a few letters quite a few different times, and I've just asked for a reply. If there's some reason, you can't get this done, health, whatever, just tell us.
Right,
yes.
No response back. That's what's the most irritating thing, probably.
We don't want them having their bucket out there with a ladder in it cutting those trees.
So if you don't have an objection, when we put this in the paper, run it in the paper like we do our weed notice that landowners must, that they're responsible for. It's going to be pretty similar. And then we'll start from there as we've posted or it's been notified. What we're afraid of is like the weeds, they are familiar with that. They see that twice a year in the paper. But about the trees and brush, that's not something that's been typically put in the paper for them to. So we thought we might want to do that due process first.
I think you just, due process.
No.
You comply with the statute. You heard due process way too much.
We did hear it today.
That's what the statutes do, is give due process to the people
Correct.
That need to attend to it. If you've done that, comply to a statute, the next step is the next step.
Okay.
If that's my office,
okay.
Bring them up.
Very good.
Don't like them, but that's what we got.
Not fun, but.
Well, people get upset, but they shouldn't.
Correct.
That's the responsibility of landowners, and, if they need help, like you said, we can work with that. Find somebody that would assist them,
Correct. And on our weeds.
Have equipment, for instance.
And on our weeds, when we address those, and usually I give them a call first and talk with them. But then we have a 10-day letter or a 15-day letter. And the 10-day letter gets them to work with it, and it's kind of a mild, here we're putting more teeth into this. But the 15-day would allow me to come to you to take it to that next level and put a notice or put a sign on their property and that we take care of it and then put it on their taxes. So I just want to talk with you about that on what my next step with you might be on some of those as well. So
yeah, I'll just pull the statute because we've talked to the Township Association.
Okay, great.
As well. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Anything else? All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, you run a long committee meeting. You try to get done in 3 minutes. We know. A couple of you weren't there. We were done quick.
I'm sorry, Terry. Okay.
Let's go approve. I need a motion to approve or approve or disapprove a recommendation for a special designation, designated liquor license for Gage County Fairgrounds, Speedway, and Beer Garden, Midway, for the Gage County Fair, July 22nd through the 27th. Need a motion to approve or disapprove?
So moved.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
And what motion?
Seconded by Hill to approve. Sorry. I'd like to hear from Gus and the.
You got
to
make a choice.
Looking at Steve Whitwer, who made the application.
Get off the fence.
I'll read Gus's recommendation. The application is made by Gage County Ag Society. Steve Whitwer's here if anyone has any questions. Looks like the application. So I've got one for the Speedway, one for the Beer Garden. Gus, do you have any opposition to any of these, this process?
No, as in the past, we're pretty close with our president, and we had good results last year. We always try to address when the fairs were, what worked well, what didn't, and we talked. Steve was over at the office a few days ago. We talked. He can touch base if he wants. He's going to be open a little later on the Midway Beer Garden, but not serving any later. That'll still be the same. Was it 12:30, Steve?
Yes, 12:30, same as last year.
He just wants to be an extra hour after that, last call to clear him out. Otherwise, it's identical to what it was last year, and we had almost zero problems, at least on the grounds anyway. So I personally have no problems with it. They did a pretty good job last year running it. So
I need to speak up, as I usually do for this issue. I am a very big supporter of the Gage County Fair. I think the Fair Board and their executives do a wonderful job. I still think that when we have events that have so much of the energy pointed toward youth and how important their involvement is, their creativeness is in 4-H and in so many different things they're involved in, that throwing booze in on top of it so they can see everybody sitting around in a beer garden drinking beer, and this is a part of every kind of organization we have, and so we got to have alcohol with it or it just doesn't work. And I know this is it's a financial thing totally, but I will vote against it again because I think we spend too much time exposing our youth that drinking is just great and everybody ought to do it.
I have to chime in on this also. The county fair is a family, a youth-oriented event, and I just don't think alcohol belongs with it. There's just too many problems with alcohol, and I know the Fair Board does a good job of running this, and I know it's all about money, but I think there should be some other way to pay bills besides selling alcohol at family events on public property.
Any other comments or discussion or questions?
I guess I got a question. Why separate one for the Speedway? They have don't they normally have their own license?
Yes, we normally have our own license, but as an extension during the fair, when we have the entertainment down front, we have to barricade and put special barricades up. Normally the Speedway does have their own license, but that's the enclosed area that we have that's barricaded by chain link fence and things. But during our concerts, when we allow alcohol down in front on the track, we have to get an extension for that. So that's why we have to go with the special designated license. Okay.
Questions for Steve? No? Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve this special use permit or special designation liquor license for the Gage County Fair submitted by the Ag Society. Vote. 5 in favor of, 2 against. Byers and Setzer were against.
Thank you.
5-2. Thank you. It's on the agenda. Call for a motion to approve or disapprove the FOP agreement with the between the county and the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge 45B.
Right, Brandon?
To become effective July 1, 2013. This agreement will supersede the current FOP agreement, so meaning that the agreement that was a three-year, that will end on the 30th, and then this new agreement will take place. So this isn't a retro agreement. This will just start new July 1. So I need a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
Second it.
Moved by Lytle, seconded by Setzer. Discussion. I'll start off here. I'm just going to step through. I guess Brandon was the chief negotiator for the FOP. If you'd like to, I'll just ask you to come forward if there's any questions for this discussion time. There were, and correct me if I get these wrong, or say them wrong, which I might if I dyslexic kicks in. There were three main issues that they wanted the board to consider for reopening the agreement. One was the overtime calculated on 171. They requested that to go to 160, and we actually settled on 168. So in a 28-day work period, overtime by CIR is recognized as a management responsibility. So even though it's 168, Gus is not obligated to give them the overtime. So we did move on that, and it's a 12-hour paid shift. They work out when they're going to get their lunch, and that can vary from time to time. So it was 171, 11.5 hour, and we went down to 12-hour, 168. The other item to be considered was the correction personnel wanted to go back to the holiday bank process that was in place 4 years ago. It's a prior system that was in place, and we agreed with the holiday bank. The negotiating committee was myself, Myron, Kathy, and Gary. The other request was to do away with the per diem for equipment purchases, which I believe mine was at $400 a year per employee.
$600
or so, yeah. Per diem. And I admit, as folks were starting to use that, it was a new process. It was somewhat cumbersome as the claims were coming in. How do we track this? And so they wanted to go away from that, and then that equipment is then administered to the sheriff back to the previous way that it was. The request that the board had, one, we needed to clean up some verbiage with regard to, let's see, it was the insurance. And again, we keep beating a dead horse about insurance, but there was something with regard to the Article 12, Section 3, about who is eligible for insurance and for how long, and also life insurance. Right now, if you're a participating full-time member in the health insurance, you're entitled to a $15,000 death benefit. I shouldn't say you. I would say your beneficiaries. I can't take it with you. So we needed to clean up some of that language because we were potentially offering things in there that we couldn't do. So we shared that with the FOP. And then we also we requested the board a four-year agreement that this would extend, and then we also worked with the FOP to put in a health insurance reopener. And I'll just read that because it's new. It's not a modification. It says, notwithstanding the provisions of Article 34 in this agreement, the county and the union may reopen Article 12, Section 2 of this agreement for the purpose of negotiating insurance coverage contributions in the event of the change in health care cost exceeding a 5% increase. So I think that was a good compromise with both of us, recognizing it's taxpayer dollars. So if there was some wild, crazy increase in insurance, we would go back and renegotiate the percentages. If it's a decrease, all parties benefit. But if it was to go greater than 5%, and I think I asked Dawn, went back and looked 3 years, and some years it went up, some years it went down. So we figured 5% was fair. There was some conversation, I should say, I won't say the bitter end, but towards the tail end of negotiating that came up with regard to vacation and whether or not it should be hours versus days. And so I went back and looked at the CIR ruling that we had back from 2010, had conversations with our then counsel, Jerry Pigsley, and back when we went to the uncomfortable situation of CIR, there was a ruling that came back based on comparabilities of our comparable counties that we would pay vacation in days, not hours. So we had that discussion. Obviously, when you're negotiating, if you can come to an agreement, You can do things outside of comparabilities. But if you can't come to an agreement, we all know where you'll end up, and we know what the CIR does, and they look at comparabilities. So that's where we decided to stay with days in designation versus hours, because that's just what it was. So I would say, and the other members can comment, I'll say that the process I felt worked well. We had to kind of go through the growing phases of some of the stuff in the past. I think that's normal. I think Kathy spent some time. You worked a shift over in corrections, working. She wasn't locked up. She was working. She spent a 12-hour shift, which was admirable. That was nice.
Well, I didn't make it 12 hours.
Oh, you didn't?
I did not make it 12 hours, okay, with Brandon or in corrections. I'm not used to those hours, but I made it till about 2 o'clock over there, and I think till almost 4 with you.
4 with me, yeah.
Yeah, so
I think that was good to kind of see this. Of course, I had done a ride-along, and I think there were some other folks that came in with negotiating with Brandon that we got an opportunity to meet and kind of work some things out. So hopefully we're past the stuff in the past. We're moving forward, looking at a 4-year agreement. If any other board members would like to ask questions of Brandon or make any comments, now's the time. If you've got anything you want to talk about the process, Brandon, if you'd like to share anything as well.
No, we were very happy with the process. It went smoothly, civilly, and I think the way we did the last 6 months was the way it should happen in the future. So
I want to say I've never done a negotiation like this before, and I learned a lot. I think that it went very well. Sitting down and communicating with each other is just the way to do it, and don't come in and we did all come in going, okay, this is what CIR said, and so, you know. But I think once we all got past that, then, which took about 5 minutes, then we were able to sit down and discuss things, and I think it went really well.
I think the changes were good. I think it just needs one more in regards to the vacation time. And that's just my opinion.
I should say that we didn't have the sheriff in sitting at the table every time. We didn't make any adjustments or any considerations for anything with regard to management responsibilities. We didn't touch those. This was wage and benefits. But there were things that periodically Brandon would call me about and ask me about, and I would say that's management. We're not going to discuss that. I conferred with Gus, and I said, this is what was brought up. We're not touching that. And so we were very careful to not deal with anything that would modify that, just wages and benefits. So, Kathy.
And in response to John, I agree. However, when they went to 12-hour shifts, then that's when the change needed to be made, since CIR has ruled that it should be paid as days rather than hours. To go back and try and change that now would not just disrupt the process, but it would end us up back in CIR, I'm sure, and they've already made their ruling that this is how it should be paid. So,
and I guess that is my objection to extending it another 3 years, is that this isn't going to be fixed till 4 years out.
Well, and there's still a consideration, just like we did this time. There was a request by the FOP to sit down and talk, and you'll recognize that we had two meetings before we actually formally started to open negotiations. And then we came before the board and took a vote of whether or not we really wanted to open up negotiations with them. So, I would contend that opportunity for the board would still be there as well, that at some point if we feel that this really falls out of what's comparable, we would go back to the FOP and ask you all to consider sitting back down and having a discussion as well.
Well, and the vacation, when we voted to reopen negotiations, we were opening on the overtime, the holiday bank, and the equipment allowance, and we said this is all we're going to discuss. We're not discussing anything else. The vacation thing came up kind of at the last minute. It was brought to our attention, and we decided we're just not changing it. We're just leaving it as it is. That was not something we were originally discussing. It's something CIR has ruled on, and so we're just leaving it as it is.
And something that's been in place for since I've been here, which is 4 years, and well past that, after I've talked to veteran deputies, it's been like that for well over 5-6 years.
It still doesn't appear to be very equitable.
I agree, but I don't. My feelings are, it's not something that can be changed at this time. And there is one way to make it more equitable is to go to 8-hour shifts, and then it is equitable. But that's not our position.
Yeah. Gus, you've been sitting here all day, and you got dressed up in your uniform for us. Would you like to comment or?
Well, I can say I sat in the past. The sheriff was sitting on the negotiation this time around, and that's fine. I want to commend the board for, and Brandon and his group for, I think this is probably one of the best ones they've had. I've told Brandon, I think I've told my committee, I think you guys are very generous after the last time go around. You remember that? It was very pleasant. And so whenever these two bodies get together and get along well, it makes my life a lot better. And Brandon and I have talked on some of the concerns I have. And I always try to make sure the issue on the vacation, but work through that. I always want to err on the side of caution. I want to do what's right for the people that voted me in office to work with them. So we'll deal with that. That's minor. That's overall, I think it's a good contract, and I appreciate everybody coming to the table on it and doing a good job this time around. So very good.
All right, we have a motion and a second for approval of the four-year agreement with the FOP. This, again, will take effect July 1, which is just a hair away. So we will, it's not retroactive. We will finish out the current agreement. This will start July 1. I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote. 6 in favor, Hill opposed. Motion passes 6-1. Sign this before you leave, please.
Matt, can I call for a 5-minute break?
Yes, yeah. It was long today, so I said somebody let me know. We'll take a point of privilege for Myron. All right, 10:45. We'll reconvene. Next on the agenda, Mr. Spearman has waited so patiently. An update on the bond issue, secondary to the. Successful election. So, Jay, if you'll come. Jay Spearman from Emeritus.
Jay Spearman, Emeritus Investment Corp, Omaha. Congratulations on your successful road improvement bond election. I have before you just a preliminary timeline. What we'll do now is start putting together all the documents for the bond issuance, the preliminary official statement, which potential bondholders are legally entitled to know, and that's all the information about the county. We are planning on being back at your July 24th board meeting, and at that meeting we'll adopt the resolution authorizing the issuance of bonds, and on that date the interest rates are set and will not change. August 19th we'll send out closing documents, so if anybody's going to be on vacation, please let us know and we'll make arrangements. And then closing on the bond issue and wiring the funds to the county on August 27th. One of the reasons we have such a long close between the day that we adopt the resolution and close on the bond issue is because I want to make sure that when we close on this bond issue, it is after August 20th, which is the date that the county certifies the valuations. Just in the event that for some reason interest rates creep up a little bit, which is what they're doing, that we should go over that 3-cent mill levy with the new valuation on August 20th, that'll provide enough room that will allow us to move forward.
Questions for Jay? I guess I'll start. I got a question. Where are rates at now? We were talking about 1.6. Are we still, and that was all inclusive cost. Where are we at now?
We're probably a little bit higher, probably a little bit closer to 1.85 or 1.9%. Over the last week, there's been a significant run on the market. One nice thing, and we talked to Terry about this a little bit earlier, is we're talking about a 10-year bond issue, which is on the shorter end of the yield curve. Over the last week, the 20-year bond paper has gone up over 100 basis points, or 1%. But one nice thing, the first 5 years are pretty much unchanged. They may have gone up a tenth of a percent at the most. And then, of course, on the 10-year paper, we've probably seen an increase of probably a quarter of a percent. But a lot of that's going to get settled out before we're back to you on July 24th. So we'll see some of that settle, and we'll obviously update the county before we're out to buy the bonds. Now, we will send the resolution out for board packets, as well as we'll send it to Roger for his review, preliminary, and then we'll send the final to Roger before we're down on the 24th.
Now, we have Road and Bridge has visited very briefly because Mark Minnelli was in a different place, but we asked about how quickly we could get some of the start calling for bids and things like that. And I know when we first started this process, we all asked Mark, how much work can we get done in this year? He was really optimistic. Well, God bless the rain. That's great for crops, but it's bad for construction. So they were saying some folks are now 30 days back. We went back and looked at the 98, 99 data, and they gave construction season, I believe it was a year and a half, 20 months.
Basically 2 years, yeah.
Almost 2 years. So, you know, what we don't want to get into is what happened to Koch Nitrogen when they had such a short time frame that they saw a 20% increase in their cost for that project, the estimated cost. And so we talked to Mark about that, of when do we do this. And he was going to meet with Galen. And the idea was, we talked about, let the bonds get lock in that low rate. We're going to pay some interest. We make a little bit of interest, not much. But, you know, 5.6 sitting in the bank, you'll make a little bit. But that's a discussion we need to have, is, you know, moving forward. We're looking at July 8th having, I think, Mark Mumford and Mark Minnelli in one room at Road and Bridge Committee talking. We'll know more then. So I was a little preemptive, thinking, let's get going here. And, oh, hold the phone. And so go ahead, Terry.
And one other thing, you know, that we have to decide on, the full board as a whole, this whole project, $5.6 million for all the road construction. Well, do we tie that all together as one, or do we maybe different segments, different companies can bid on? For example, Jefferson County PWF Road, if there's a company in that area, I've got some time this fall. Their plant's set up in that area. I got time for 6 miles. Well, maybe we can do that 6 miles and get it done cheaply. So during that process, maybe, and we haven't decided yet, if it's winner take all or bid on each four different segments, well, I would break it down like that. So that's something we have to decide fairly soon, too.
And there's that segment at Adams Philly that goes through two districts over here, and the consideration for that Philly North Road, maybe you all want to visit, maybe we split that. I don't know. You know, that's because they're going to be working on that bridge, and you split that project up. I don't know. What do you think about? That's a big stretch.
That's a big stretch. And then also the first miles directly north of the Pickerel Blacktop there, there's three different culverts there that will be replaced. There's culverts, they're right, I drove by there, the culverts are laying there. They need to be replaced before we do the overlay. Hopefully here sooner than later they'll be able to do those culverts and get that packed back in so we can have that settled before we do the overlay. So the longer it can settle, the better in that area. But then at the same time, those are all just considerations you need to take into account.
So Road and Bridge will be bringing a lot of information next couple meetings and to try and coordinate how everything's going to take place. So
got another question, Jay, and this, and maybe I'm asking it too early or whatever. The county and Donna, I visit a little bit. When do we start making payments, or do we make an interest payment 6 months out, or how does that handle, or will you have a timetable for that too here at some time?
We can set the payments however you would like. Typically, if we're paying bonds back from taxes, a tax levy, we'll set up interest in June and December, with principal in December. And I know that's
kind of why you are.
That's not, yeah. And because of the way collected in May and September, we levy across the fiscal year, and we're legally allowed to do that just because of cash flowing of bond issues.
So our this first December,
our first payment will be in June. Our first interest payment will be June of next year, 2014. And then first principal in December of 14. So when we July 24th, you'll know exactly what you're going to need to levy for next year, and that which will include the June and December of 14 payments.
That's the way we do it with the other bonds. That's how it's set up. It was June and December.
So our last courthouse bond is being paid this December. So we won't overlap then with the payment.
We'll overlap in the fiscal year, but not...
Not for a tax collection.
Just the interest payment, because you'll have to budget for the interest payment for June, because that'll be in the...
June-December of 14.
Thank you.
Our main concern is how fast you spend the money. Not necessarily when you spend it, but we just need to make sure that a significant amount of those bond proceeds are spent within 3 years, which I don't anticipate being a problem.
Well, that's Terry's job. So.
That'll be easy to spend. Don't worry about that.
Let the record show, Terry says it's easy to spend 5.6.
it's the tax attorneys get involved if we have a lot of bond proceeds left over after 3 years.
All right. Thank you for coming down.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any more questions for Jay? I'm sure there will be. And then maybe pass along to, and I don't know if Galen's contacted Mark. Okay, so there'll
Mark's
be
on
Mark Minnelli, but yeah, if Mark Mumford can be at that their July 8th meeting at 8 o'clock, if him or somebody could too, I guess as we visit, that's when we really will start visiting about it at that committee meeting here on the 4th in the meeting room, July the 8th at 8 a.m.
You should tell him I said he's been spending a lot of time on vacations.
Sorry for him to come back to work.
That's right.
Yeah, if you could relay that to him, too, and if he could be here, that'd be great, or somebody, because then help to make sure we aren't missing something.
Okay.
Tell him we'd prefer having you here anyway. Maybe you better not.
Whether it's true or not, I'll tell him. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next is a approve or disapprove business associate agreement with Advanced Correctional Healthcare, Inc., an amendment to the agreement for the provision of inmate health services. Gus, can I?
Motion.
Yeah, I call for a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn.
Sure. Okay, this is a company we've dealt with since about, I think, 2008. What they do is they provide all the medical services for us. In-house training, policy procedures, anything outside the office, then obviously goes to the hospital or wherever else. But basically, there's an amendment to this, and this time around, and basically what it is, in a nutshell, and Rogers viewed these as well and signed off on it. Now, there was a 1.5% increase over last year's, which was about $448.51 from a premium. The only thing that's really changed on it is they have added the county and the sheriff's position onto their liability insurance coverage. And they took anti-rejection drug. There's one that they took off. They probably ever used it in the jails they had, so they found out they could save the county's money by just taking that off the schedule. Then if something did come up where we still needed it, it'd be available to us on an as-needed basis, case by case. That is about all that has changed on it. They, I can tell you, they've been very good to work with, and their lack of a better way of saying, very anal on certain things in jail. If staff doesn't do it right, they're on them. And we have meetings every so often throughout the year, and they make sure that's corrected and it's updated and moved on. So I'd recommend they go ahead and approve the contract.
Questions for the sheriff? Seeing none, I have a motion and a second. Vote. 7-0 to approve the agreement. I need a motion to approve or disapprove resolution 13-16 to transfer $15,000 from the general fund to the jail fund for the maintenance of the department.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Hear from the sheriff.
Okay, what we have is talked to Don, and we figured about 15 will be about, we're just about $500, give or take. Don, was that in that area? It's close. and now, if you got your packet from the meeting we had Monday, and then the rest of you should have that in your packets for today. But I've highlighted on there the areas we went over. Pretty much every one is related to population in the jail.
And whether that would be a lot here or we had stored somewhere else, farmed them out. We had utilities, water was higher, sewer was higher. The boarding, the contract, prisoners outside of the facilities was much higher. A lot of that's contributed to, and probably the main reason I went over was when we had our major plumbing renovations over here. I think that bill is about $25,000 or $30,000. I had to move out my entire general male population to two different facilities. And so I think we're still holding one of those larger claims that just came in. The last half of June, I've tried to keep just billing over the next budget year. This is pretty much the first half that we're looking at for June. But I think it's $25,000 to $30,000 in that area to hold them there, as well as the medical expenses for them. Medical exams, I think we were over a little bit on that. That just simply goes, when we hire people, I do have all my staff, along with all the background we also do a medical if they're going to give a contingent offer to, for employment. So I make sure they're fit for duty, especially the job they have to do, whether it be corrections or law enforcement, whatever. So as we go through that, everybody, part-time, full-time, everyone. So that does add up, and we had quite a few part-time through the jail this year, so that adds up there for us. Of course, the supplies in the office, that just goes hand-in-hand with population in the back. We've got fingerprint cards and ink and everything else, paper you have to have. It just follows it. And then, of course, fuel. We're doing a lot of transports to different facilities, and where would we bring them back and forth to court? So that just relates it back to how busy the courts are and we are. So you never like to go over. This is probably one of the smaller amounts. I know the predecessor, I think there was once we had to ask for $77,000. It's guesstimate, as Matt says, on budget, excuse me, where you're going to be on them. And it just takes one incident to put you over. And pretty much what happened was a plumbing renovation, and it took me over the top, along with everything else. So it's pretty black and white.
I'll also make the comment, too, about increased just general population over there. I every so often go on your website and look at the amount, and inmates you do have, and quite often you have listed inmates that are in other facilities. So I will say too,
it's just a fact of life.
Population,
it is, and there are those times we aren't set up in this type of facility to handle a lot of the ones that probably have some issues, so to speak, whether it's they need attitude adjustment or psychological, whatever. So we'll always move them up to a facility in the state that can handle that and have doctors on staff, and that costs me. I have a juvenile right now that I'm all for Roger doing it. It's a juvenile. It's adult docket, and he needs to be where he's at. But that's several hundred dollars a day. And if it continues on, I have a facility that I think I can go to that's a little cheaper. But I want to see kind of where it plays out here first initially, and then we'll kind of go from there. So
I think you also made another point there. It not only increases the population there, but that directly affects our county attorney too, because I know that workload has been increased too by the amount of inmates.
Well, I told him I'm his job security, so he should thank me for that.
You're keeping him. Yeah.
Absolutely, keeping his office going, yeah. But it is. It's us to Roger the courts. That's exactly what it is. So it's just changing the times. And the type of population we have there is not like it used to be there. They're usually in there for some pretty major offenses. We have assaults sometimes on our staff, and they do it on themselves or each other. And so it's just a more violent society, and it relates back to my population and the jail we bring them into. So. Just the way it is.
How long was that plumbing? What time frame was that? How many?
Gosh, I think we had it down, Terry, to where the Reitzmans come in and moved it out, and the crew from Chiefs was Industries behind them right away. I think maybe 2 weeks in that area.
The population was out of there for 2 weeks, basically.
Yes.
What did the rest of the jailers do during that time? That's the question I got.
That's only half population was gone. I still had the other side of the jail that they had population. So, right. Yeah, you could probably look at it as a little less for them, but they didn't get out 100% because they still had their side with the females, work release, and everybody else. So, yeah. But they were working.
Okay. How long did you estimate them being out?
For the project, we were guessing week 10 days. It just kind of depends how things went. And it went pretty smooth because initially they were going to come in and cut out all the metal. And they got thinking that would be a lot more cost prohibitive and be out a lot longer. So they come in, designed it to where they'd have the prefabricated stainless steel sheets already cut out. They just removed the toilets, put that right over the existing problems we had, bolted them on, and come back in. When they were done, plumbers put the toilets back on it and left. and all the new plumbing behind. So I went for the project they had. I think they did probably 18 or 20 some sales. That was pretty quick, week 10 days. I was pretty happy with that. It moved right along, considering. So
I'll just say that one of those things where jail standards comes in. You got to do your project, and if we hadn't done the plumbing project, we wouldn't have had that expense and run over here. And then we also in law enforcement discussed where you at. You're 88% on your sheriff's budget.
We were the last time I talked about the last.
I'm not sure how.
We're probably a little more than that now, but okay. I think we're better than the sheriff's office side.
So this is this is just the jail side, and that's one thing that I sometimes even forget is that there's two budgets that Gus is responsible for. There's the jail budget, and then there's the sheriff's budget. So. Any more questions, discussion for Gus at all? Okay, I have a motion and a second to approve transferring $15,000 from the general fund to the jail fund for maintenance of the department. Vote 7-0 to approve. Next is to approve or disapprove federal fund purchase program supplement agreement and authorizing the chairman to sign. Motion to approve or disapprove, but I don't know what this is.
Well, I make a motion to approve.
Jurgens, Dorn.
Basically what this is.
Oh, yes, I know what this is.
And I should have Deborah maybe address this. She's directly involved with it with Mark Minnelli. She can explain better than I, but when Mark came up to us probably 2 months ago during committee, this was something that the state came down and said, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this. And he said, well, what are you signing that for? You take it from there. And we did not sign it at the time because it was basically right. What was it doing?
It's basically where the state allows our federal funding. But if there's another county that's not in compliance with some of their roads or bridges or things that they're doing, that it gives the state the right, I guess, to come back and take our funds and use it for someone who's not being compliant. While we're trying to do everything we can to be compliant, but it's almost like Mark was saying, it would give the incentives for someone to not be in compliant to be quickly in compliant by taking our funds. So he was suggesting not to sign it, but after all the counties that have been signing it, where there was no leverage at that point, he said, so he suggested go ahead and sign it because we're very active in our federal program in this county, so we don't foresee any of our funds being pulled to help another county because we definitely we've got our projects ready to go, and we're always on top of those. And we meet every control point that they submit to us, or whether it's environmental or NEPA or any of our green sheets, which is all has to do with if there's mitigation or if there's any kind of fish and wildlife and stuff. We meet all of those control points on ours. So our projects are moving forward. I think that's more for federal funds that are out there that have been sitting that no one's actively moving forward on. So I think fair to say that we are okay to sign this, like Mark said.
So more or less what you're saying, Deborah, is even more so than we were even before, it's even more important that when we have federal funds approved, that get out there and get it
done.
We
move on them, exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's very unusual, I think, to have a county to have three bridge projects like we do. It's an exciting time. It's a lot, and most counties don't get this opportunity. We're making sure that we move forward on all of them, and thanks to Roger's help, he has really helped us meet those control points. So we're very thankful that we can move forward as fast as we have. I suspect we'll have – we've got this bridge now that we started in May. We've got two bridges we'll be starting in the spring, so we're very excited, moving right along.
If you want to see a big hole in the ground, go over and look at the Wymore Bridge. I took my daughter there last night, and we threw rocks in it. It looks like it's a creek, but it looks like a narrow tributary of looks like where the Blue River gets narrow. There's quite a bit of water there, but that expanse is amazing. That little bridge that was there before, it's got to be three or four times the size that it takes to get that. And they've got the sheet pilings in on the north side, and they've got everything moved over. It's kind of neat. I mean, like to look at rebar and stuff like that. But.
And they've poured them, so then we're ready to go. So.
Yeah. A lot of area. All right. What questions for Debbie regarding this agreement? Seeing none, have a motion and a second. Vote 7-0 to approve. Next is approve or disapprove the resolution number
13-17.
13-17 for the federal funds purchase agreement. This is just an adjunct to that.
Yeah. Make a motion to approve. It's basically,
Second.
It's basically ties the two together. Same thing we just spoke about.
Moved by Juergens, seconded by Dorn. Any more discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve. Approve and or disapprove or and or approve or disapprove road use and maintenance agreement between Gage County and the Steel Flats Wind Project LLC. Need a motion to approve or disapprove?
Make a motion to approve.
Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. I'll defer to Roger here.
Basically, this is an agreement, quite frankly, that we talked about several months ago, and I will accept the responsibility. We didn't sign it. I will tell you, I reviewed it at that time. Everything looked fine. Talked to Galen. When you went over that, you saw there's some really neat things that they put in there, because whenever you have a construction project like this, you're going to beat up the roads, and then it's like, well, wait a minute, they were already lousy anyhow. Mm. This one, they're videotaping everything before we start, videotaping it at the end, and that will help make sure that we get everything resolved. So had an opportunity, like I said, earlier on this year to review it. I would recommend to the board legally there is certainly no problems, and Galen had indicated it was fine as far as covering it says road use, but there's also some repair. Mm-hmm. And they're building some of the intersections up as they make the big turns with the equipment coming in. So, again, oversight on my part, I will accept that.
And that's basically all it is, where these towers are going to be in place. I think there's 5 or 6 miles they've designated the route they're going to take. They video recorded the roads beforehand, and there's some places that has to be Culver extensions, someplace, because it takes a wide turn to get this equipment in there. So if anything, it'll be an improvement to all these roads, not at our county expense, at their expense. So it's a plus, if you ask me. So.
And I visited with Galen. He does have a contact person. I can't remember exactly who he's spoken to, and he's been down there, and he's been watching that quite a little bit, so there's good communication there. Mm-hmm.
Just as a sidelight, been informed by one of the rock haulers in the area, brought up the committee that down here at Holmesville, you can't get any 3/4-inch rock because the steel wind farm has come in and taken all of it for a period of time. So it's just a part of the project. Yeah.
Okay, so I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve the agreement. Next is to approve or disapprove amending the MOU between Koch Industries, and Gage County for the 89th Road Project. Motion to approve or disapprove?
Make a motion to approve.
Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. This is the agreement where we have to adjust the funding amount in there. It was initially estimated at $500,000 with the Windstream expenses, with the... Who else? There's. We got to come up with a final cost. On
Norris.
So we just. Norris.
Correct. We have we had costs with Norris. We had our contractor, Manelli Wagner's additional fees for their engineering, Windstream, Norris Public, and then temporary easement on the property there.
So I visited with Roger, county attorney, on Monday, and
we were negotiating as far as a paragraph. They added a paragraph, just so you're aware of it. Basically, it says that we will, whenever possible, qualify the purchase of materials to be sales tax exempt, which, of course, we would do anyhow. But there was some language in there where we were guaranteeing things, and I put in an email that I'm not going to guarantee anything that's a smaller version of the IRS. With the Nebraska Department of Revenue, so that's a tongue-in-cheek thing.
It
Anyhow, I would recommend to the board, again, it covers the added costs that have come in to play through the bid process and a couple other minor changes as far as language, so it meets everybody's approval.
And basically, this project is set to start July 1st. That's the start date on this thing. So, September 1st will be here before you know it, so they're going to have to get rolling. So,
utilities are being relocated. It's already been staked the right-of-way, so utilities can be pushed back. So we're ready to go with the contractor. Pre-construction meeting, while they're going to start on Monday, our pre-construction meeting can fall. It doesn't have to come right before. We will probably be having it next week or the week after. I haven't heard yet on that date or that time, but I will notify you when I do. And I thought we kept job security for Roger from our office.
I will say this project and the time frame at which Koch wanted this, I know that Roger's, we just been throwing stuff at
yes,
him.
Yes, we have, and I appreciate his hard work.
It'd be very easy to put stuff in front of this and say, wait, but Roger's been wonderful about that, and even the local utilities and the communication, those meetings that are getting put together. I remember when they first talked about this timeline, I think in Roden Ridge we thought, yeah, right, this isn't going to happen, but it did.
So
a lot of folks put some effort forward. So hope Coke appreciates
it. They've got some good people to work with, too, as far as when we tweak things. A lot of times in a big corporation like that, you got to go through a protocol that may go 2-3 weeks before it gets through the desk. And I know Matt and Ben through Coke Niger have been wonderful to deal with.
What is the final total?
The final total is $830,062.
$830,000.
Good project.
All right. Seeing no more discussion or questions, we have motion second. Vote 7-0 to approve. Next is approve or disapprove child support enforcement contract between Gage County and Steve Travis. Attorney? Move to approve. Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion?
Roger, you see that? Yeah, basically this is identical last year except changed the year. And as most of you know, Mr. Kravitz is contracted through our office to handle the child support end of things in this county. So he does a fine job, and the only ones we get are the ones that are felony stuff that basically he can't get people to pay. So I would recommend approval.
It looks like the dollar amount is $56,000.
Same as last.
Same as last year.
Same amount. Yep.
Any discussion or questions for Roger? Have a motion and a second. Vote 7-0 to approve the agreement. Next is to approve or disapprove agreement between Gage County and Region 5 Systems for Emergency Protective Custody Services.
I will move to approve.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion?
I do have a question. On this agreement, it says page 1 of 3 and then page 3 of 3. On the back, but I don't have a page to do it.
Darn copier. Didn't copy that page, did it?
I got a copy here you can look at.
Yeah, that's probably the one with the fees, isn't it?
They did, when they came and presented there, they told us there would be a slight increase, and the charge went up to $124.
And we have to have this contracted service because they help me with this, Roger. This is where they help to provide those services for folks that we need to house.
Correct.
Because if we don't have this, then we'll be subject to full expense.
It's basically full expense and no guarantee of placement. Yeah, this helps facilitate when we have a problem or a situation. They can help us get the placement, and the cost is tremendously cheaper. So, again, this is a very good benefit to this county.
We still have overflow to Brian or whatever, but this does definitely help our costs for EPC.
Any discussion, Cover?
And I'll assure you the chairman of the Region 5 Systems Board will sign the agreement.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We have a motion and a second. Any more discussion? Seeing none, vote. 7-0 to approve. Approve or disapprove final restatement of the county health insurance plan.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion. Dawn or?
Well, Dawn will probably bring up this. Is she, or a lot of discussion on this. We, like I said, this is part of our, every 7 years, or we've been in it 7 years, so we have to review it. And we had several things we talked about. And last, or when Dawn called me, I said I'd seen something about this, and I hadn't. It was Gus was in his packet for that health care part. Yeah, and I knew I'd seen a health care plan somewhere, and I had. So, go ahead.
Just like we talked about last meeting, the law requires us to do this, and our old policy had 10 amendments to it. We'd made 12 amendments, and they recommend actually whether it's 7 years or not, once you get past at least 10 amendments, changes, it's hard for them to decipher through our plan to process it. So they like to have you restate it anyhow. But we didn't. We're at our seven-year mark. So basically, Myron, do you want to, as far as some of the little changes we went through, we complied with some of the things that standard through the different insurances. Other than that, the changes until we get into that.
Changes were minor. Like I said, one other time, I brought up that I think this is where the dependent
baby. The baby is covered.
Now we're covering the baby for 30 days. That was, I guess, one of them I saw in there.
That was one of the major things.
Major changes, because otherwise, the minute that baby is born. Has no health insurance unless they've taken care of that before. This way they have 30 days to find health insurance. So, and that, Amber said that's one that's most of the other policies have. And that's what we looked at on a lot of these. It's several times I know the question was brought up, well, what does the industry do? Not that we would necessarily need to do that, but then you have an idea of nobody's covering this or the majority were. And Amber's seemed very knowledgeable on these types of questions and Lowell and they were all there at that meeting, and we went through them line item by line item. So,
and Amber is the one who knows what's going on.
Yeah.
If you ever have any questions, member of this board, you just call Amber, and she's got she knows what's happening.
Yeah.
We may have to have some amendments down the road once this new health care plan comes in, but as of right now, we have to do this. We may have 10 amendments in another year.
That's a big unknown. They're trying to keep us up the best we can, but they'll just keep telling you there's things going to come up that people just aren't expecting.
And this is part of the chairman. There is a sheet for the chairman to sign part of the restatement. So.
Discussion, comments? Have a motion and a second. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Next, I need a motion to go into closed session. Actually, before I take this motion, anything else for the give you?
I do have one other quick thing. I forgot to bring it up. The EMS contracts are all up. This part of finance, we discussed it. And we're having a meeting with all the squads next Tuesday night, the committee is, to go over the contracts, try and get feedback from them on, do we need to change things? Where are we going? And that type of stuff. Last year, I know we weren't able to meet with all of them this time. Contact all of them. They said that all seven squads will be there. So we will have a discussion with them and be working on those contracts. So
Tuesday the 2nd, right, Meyer?
Tuesday the 2nd, 7:30 down at the fire barn. Yeah. It with Brian Dakin's office.
Does the city call that a barn?
I don't know. No.
I don't know.
The fire department.
Adam will have a barn.
Adam will have a barn.
Adam will have a Taj Mahal. That would be nice.
Yeah, that would Taj Mahal.
Okay, anything else before I call for a motion for executive session? We've got employee evaluations for Mark, Dave, and Galen. And Mark's is kind of the essence because he had an assessment by NEMA, so we need to get on the stick and get those, fill those out and get those to Gary.
Please.
But we need to do one on day two. Mark, Dave, and Dave.
Okay.
Okay, so now I need a motion to go into closed session to discuss contract negotiations. And one of them is a new contract that we won't divulge yet, and the other one is a public defender contract. There'll be no decision afterwards. It's just we'll discuss strategy for that. And a motion to approve going into it.
And you're going to hold.
Oh, and then I should. Necessary for the protection of the public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual.
Moved
by Setzer.
Second.
Seconded by Juergens. Vote 7-0 to approve. Quick potty break and then need it. If not, when
you go. You guys.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. I need a motion to come out of executive session at 12:23.
The mayor should be paying for that following the tax.
I make a motion to come out of executive session.
Moved by Juergens, seconded by Hill. Vote 7-0. Anything else for the good of the order of the Board of Supervisors? Long meeting, good discussion. All done. All right, we will stand adjourned at 12:23.